Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. On this week's show, we'll be talking about living and working abroad.
Elizabeth Schuster Sammons has lived in 6 different countries, either working or studying in each, including a 2-year stint as one of the first blind Peace Corps volunteers. We'll speak with her about her experiences and some advice she has for other visually impaired people who are interested in living abroad, no matter what their home country. But first, for our tip of the week. This week, we have 2 tips from Elizabeth Sammons about things you can do before you go to another country to make your time there more rewarding and enjoyable. Here's the first one.
So for those of you who are interested in going abroad, if you have NFB Newsline, there is an international newspaper section, and they include newspapers from Japan, from China, from Russia, from Greece, from New Zealand, several from England, several from Canada. I would really encourage you just to look through those newspapers periodically to be able to hear news from a little different slant than what you would hear it in the U.S. and just kind of get a feel for what's going from India. I forgot India. To kind of get a feel for what's happening in those countries, because reading the news really gives a good feel for, you know, what people at least are talking about and thinking about.
It's a great idea to understand the world through the eyes of the local people.
And here's another tip about something you can do to help you feel more comfortable among the local population.
So I felt, and I do feel, if you go to another country and you don't know the language, you're blind and deaf. So it's very important, if you possibly can, to learn as much of the language as you can. And there are many, many ways to do that. And it doesn't mean you have to be able to read, you know, the great works of literature or debate medieval philosophy. But the more that you are able to learn and at least try to use, first of all, people are more friendly. That's universal. But second of all, you will be far less dependent on other people. So for me, my language was my ears. My language was my way to be able to bridge what my eyes couldn't sometimes.
I've never mentioned this on this show before, but I lived in Germany for over a year, and having learned some German before I got there was a huge help in being able to understand what was going on and interact with the people I ran into. I think she's absolutely right on this for everybody. Let's start by meeting Elizabeth.
My name is Elizabeth Schuster Sammons. I am 49 years old and live in Ohio now. But I've had the privilege in my life of being able to live in 6 countries and work in 5 of those 6. And life's been fairly good so far.
Many of our listeners have visual impairments. Do you?
Yes. I was born blind, and actually I have a rather non-traditional autobiography or bio. You know, most people start out with, you know, where they went to college and stuff, but I deliberately put the first sentence of my bio that when Elizabeth was born blind, a doctor told her parents that she should be institutionalized. And the reason I do that is to help people understand how much has changed since, you know, 1966, when things like that still happened.
Things sure have changed a lot. I was born in the early 50s, and back then, you know, I went to a school for the blind until I was in 5th grade. Mainstreaming people with disabilities didn't happen until a lot later.
Absolutely.
So what happened in your case?
Well, I went to the Ohio State School for the Blind in kindergarten and 1st grade, and I was able to learn Braille there. And then for the next 3 years, I went to what's called a sight-saving class. And when I was going to go into 5th grade, it was the year before mainstreaming laws came into effect. It was 1974. And I was from a small town in Ohio, and they had never had a student with visible disabilities that they knew of in their system. And they really didn't want me to come in, so my parents talked to our church, and there was a lawyer at our church who said, "Give me a dollar so I can tell them I'm hired, and I will fight this with you." So they and the lawyer went to the school board and the school board decided that perhaps I could go to public school, but they would have to have a policeman go with me before I went to school to do like a dry run, that I wasn't a community hazard. They weren't worried about me, but they were worried that I would be a hazard for the community. So that was the summer that I learned how to use my cane. Because before that, I really had not wanted to use a cane. But my mother told me, if you don't use a cane, you really are a hazard to yourself, even if you aren't anyone else, crossing streets and such. So I learned to use a cane. And I remember very distinctly a July day walking with a policeman to the school and back. And he said, you know, this is your Independence Day. You get to go to school here. But I remember the day before when I was leaving for school, my mother said, we've gotten you in. It's up to you from here to prove yourself.
You must have been about 10 years old at that time. How did you react to what your mom said?
When I told that to some people, they thought it was a really harsh statement. But for me, it was exciting. It's like, well, of course I'm going to prove myself. Just thanks for getting me in. So I never felt like that was a threat. I felt like it was a positive challenge, like, here's the race, go run it.
You know, it's interesting. We interview people around the world from various countries about conditions for the blind in those countries. And we hear many stories about, you know, how the disabled don't have the same rights and they're not welcomed into public arenas in many countries. And it's an interesting reminder that it wasn't so long ago that things were the same in this country. And so it does take some time to change.
I do some mentoring with young people with visual impairments and with other disabilities, and I very often share that story with them for that very reason, to tell them, you know, just because you're in America, you're young, but these things really did happen, and I'm one that they happened to, so you're absolutely right.
We're going to, in the focus topic, be talking mostly about your experiences in various countries throughout the world, but can you just tell our listeners what your current position is?
Sure. My current position is working with our state vocational rehabilitation agency, which is called Opportunities for Ohioans with Disabilities. And I do research, outreach, some public relations, writing, number of things for them.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
This week's focus topic is Elizabeth's experiences traveling, living, studying, and working in a variety of countries.
What was your first experience abroad? You were quite young, as I understand.
I ended up graduating from high school when I was 16, but my parents said, you've always been a year or two ahead anyway. You are too young to go to college. But we had had an exchange student in our home from Germany the year before, and I said, well, how about if I go to Europe? But they said, wonderful idea, let's go ahead and do it. So I applied, and in 82-83, I was in Switzerland as an exchange student.
So shortly after college is when you got into more of your overseas work experiences. Can you talk a little about that?
I should step back a little bit and say, my mother was in a military family, and she was moved all over. I think she went to either 13 or 17 schools growing up. So we were used to having international visitors when I was growing up, and I always just thought they were so neat. And my father was at a college where we had some international students. I always tried to be friends with them. I loved the way they talked. And, of course, doing my own exchange year really gave me a feel for different ways of doing things. And then I did a double major in French and communications in college, and I went on and got my master's degree at Ohio State University in journalism. And I did focus on international journalism, things that were going on. At that time, it was really starting with Gorbachev and Perestroika and talking about all the changes in Russia. So I started to study Russian. So after that, I met a woman who had participated in a governmental exchange. So there were Russians who came to the U.S. and Americans who would go to Russia with exhibits about their respective countries. And she said, come on, you should really apply. You'd be perfect. You speak Russian. You are enthusiastic. And it took her three times. She finally said, I called the people on your behalf. Have you applied? And my thought was really, oh, I'll never get in. I'm blind. But I was so, she embarrassed me into applying. And very long story short, I did apply. They said to their knowledge, I was the first guide ever with a disability, certainly with a visible disability, who was part of that exhibit. So in 1990, I went to the then Soviet Union, And I worked there for the better part of a year through the U.S. Information Service.
So what were your responsibilities there then?
I was a what we call curator for the exhibit. So that meant we had 16 stands. There were 24 guides. And we would rotate from stand to stand. So we had to learn the contents of each stand and be ready to answer visitor questions. You know, it was really giving a spiel repeatedly, because we had between 2 and 5,000 visitors a day that would come through this exhibit, and we would work in shifts, 2 hours and an hour off, 2 hours, an hour off. And, of course, it was all in Russian because, you know, this was in the provinces of Russia. I was in, then it was part of the Soviet Union. It was Moldova. And then we moved to Central Asia, to the now country of Kazakhstan. And at the very end, I was in Siberia in a city called Novosibirsk. And all of those were very, very different cities. Two of them were not majority Russian. I mean, people spoke Russian, but they were ethnically very different from the Russians. So, yeah, we were just representatives of our country. The exhibit was called Design USA. And so all of it was about the architecture or internal design or cars or kitchens. So it all had to do with design.
Elizabeth, did the people who made the decision about hiring you have any reticence about you being blind?
When I came back to the United States after the exhibit, I asked them that. And I'll never forget the kind of the lead person. She just laughed. She said, "Oh, my dear, you have no idea how big of a decision that was for us." And because, again, this was before ADA. This was, you know, not something that they had to do. Accommodations were not something they had to make. So, yes, it was a very big decision. And I'd like to add, not because it's myself, but because I'm so happy about it, that shortly after that, they also hired another professional for the exhibit who had a different disability and also a very visible disability. And they had a couple of specialists on disability design who went over. So I really feel like, not because of me, but perhaps the fact that they saw that someone can really do this, that they became much more favorably inclined to thinking about other people going over. And as you know, that's so common to have. The first one is always the hard one. And after that, if that person is all right with it, then people start to think a little more widely.
And what accommodations, if any, did you ask for?
I didn't ask for any accommodations. Sometimes if they gave us things on paper, you know, I would just ask one of the other guys, "Hey, could you read this to me?" I guess when because I didn't take a computer over, I think I remember when I was doing a little bit of translating written materials, I think I asked a Russian to read it to me, and then I would type it. I had a typewriter with me. The only thing that I sort of, it wasn't really an accommodation, but every time when we moved the exhibit, we had build up and takedown, which all of us had to participate in. It was very physical, a very cluttered environment. It was a very, you know, one of those things. So I went to the supervisor. I said, "Look, these are the things I'm good at. If you can give me something where I'm in one place, I don't care how boring it is, screwing in the screws or cleaning the plastic or, you know, polishing the wood." I said, "But I'd rather try not to be running all over the place." So I really thought of my own accommodations for the most part. And they saw that I worked hard and somebody had to screw in the screws. So why not me?
Well, and I think that often works out the best. I mean, you know, being visually impaired, you and I know how we operate the best. Each individual knows how they operate the best, and sometimes it's better to propose solutions.
Right.
So this position only lasted for a year, and I gather you've been all sorts of other places in all sorts of other interesting positions. Where did you go next?
After that, I went to Peace Corps. Peace Corps is volunteer. They do pay all your expenses, so it doesn't cost you something. But I went to Hungary, and I taught English in far western Hungary in a small town. The name is Sarvar, S-A-R-V-A-R. And I was teaching in an academic high school there.
When you applied to the Peace Corps, did they exhibit any reticence about taking on a blind person?
No, I was very upfront about my vision. And so they were more worried about my wisdom teeth than about my eyes, honestly. I had to get my wisdom teeth out. You know, I told them that I had had the experience. I think that was the thing. They saw that I already had experience. And that I could, you know, speak for myself, be pretty independent. I mean, no, I know several people who are blind and a couple of other disabilities, even back in the 70s, who served in Peace Corps. So, no, I would have to say that Peace Corps probably has a pretty good reputation with recruiting and bringing on volunteers.
As you were traveling around Eastern Europe to these various countries, what kind of reception did you get as a visually impaired person?
When I was in Russia, many people, especially in these smaller cities, had never seen an American. And they were really amazed and so happy that our exhibit was there. And word would just go out like wildfire. Sometimes they actually, not too often, but occasionally they would actually say, could I touch your hand? I've never touched an American. And that was a real feeling of trust and a feeling like you were truly the ambassador. Because whatever you said, they would remember. And sometimes I had people, again, this being less than 50 years after World War II, most of these people would have passed away now. Sometimes I had people who brought things who said, you know, the American troops in Western Russia or Poland or places brought this. I still have this blanket. We still use it in our family. And I just want you to know that we remember America with great gratitude and wonderful feelings towards you.
So it sounds like having an American over there was so novel for them that the fact that you were blind almost was overshadowed by your being American.
I would say definitely in some cases, but I would also say in other cases, word went out, oh, they have this invalid, which is what they call a disabled person. They have this invalid on the exhibit. And I think one of the hardest things I ever had to do, some of the parents would come with their children and they would say, could you please, please help our child to go to America and to see an American doctor? And I remember one woman whose child had developmental disability said, oh, I heard that in America you can do a brain exchange. I would love to go over. It doesn't matter if I live or die, but I want my child to have some hope of having intelligence and I want to donate my brain. And when you heard this and these people were serious and they had tears in their eyes, it was so hard for me to answer them because as a person with a disability, I knew where they were coming from and it made me appreciate my own parents so much more because I was 24 when I went over. Of course, I've been grateful to my parents, but I never really thought about the pain and the struggle they had to go through. I mean, to me, it was just growing up. It was getting into that school. It was proving the policeman I could do it. But for them, it was always, what if she doesn't? Or, you know, what do we have to do to make this happen? And when I went home, I tried to thank my parents, and my mother died very shortly after, and so I'm glad that I was able to actually get that realization before she died.
Now, you were traveling around these areas for about 10 years, and you eventually got into some advocacy work yourself over there. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure, I can. My first real job that I got in Russia on my own, I had read some things about something called the Wheeled Mobility Center. It's out of California, and they mostly try to build rugged, sturdy, adaptable wheelchairs for different parts of the world. And they were looking for somebody that could kind of be the liaison between Russia and America. And, you know, I would get my orders from them, but I could, you know, help carry out. And it was pretty neat. Yeah, they had this sports club. They did all kinds of things. But we also decided to do some work with the Library for the Blind, making it accessible and kind of to some degree getting the two groups together. And what I found was, you know, it was very, very in different boxes at first. You know, I use a wheelchair. I'm blind. I'm deaf. I, you know, what have you. But once people started actually talking a little bit and they found out there were so many things in common that they all faced, like, you know, accessible transportation, you know, the snow in the winter, the way people might not necessarily want them to be in their school or be somewhere because they had special schools. They kind of started talking and forming some friendships and some relationships. I left there in 2000, and I honestly don't know what's happened since then. But it was pretty neat to be in the very bottom level of that.
If somebody with a disability, visual or otherwise, is interested in going abroad, is there some place that they can go for advice or assistance?
I think it may have started by then, but there's a wonderful group called Mobility International USA, M-I-U-S-A. And they are a group based out in the West Coast, and they do support on both people coming to the U.S. with disabilities and people leaving the U.S., going to other places as exchange students or scholars, primarily the academics, not so much work, although I'm sure that they would certainly give tips for work. I wish I had known then if they existed. You know, I didn't know anything about them until long after I came back to the U.S. But I guess, honestly, the funny thing is it never struck me in 1982 when I was an exchange student or really when I went on the exhibit or being in Peace Corps. It never struck me that I was a pioneer. I was just doing what I wanted to do. And when I look back now, I realize, oh, there weren't very many people before me or at that time who did that. And it's funny. I guess we don't often see ourselves in the larger scene, especially when we're younger. I guess we just don't think about it.
Sometimes you only recognize these accomplishments with hindsight after some time has passed.
It's true. Yeah, that's absolutely true.
Do you have contact information or a website for the Mobility International Group?
Yes. It is www.miusa.org. So Mobility International USA. And all of their resources are free. They actually this summer are pushing, it's called the hashtag Blind Abroad program. The State Department is actually really realizing that there's a deficit of people who are blind going abroad. And I believe they may even be offering some scholarships. I don't want to be quoted on that, but they definitely have posted some stories, including my own, but of people who are blind who have gone abroad and done things. And they have incredible resources. I mean, they have resources for people with autism, for people with, you know, invisible disabilities, mental health disabilities, deafness, blindness, mobility, all on that website. And it's really the most comprehensive, easy-to-use, accessible site on that topic that I've ever seen. I think they're wonderful. If I were out there, I'd try to work for them.
Are there other organizations that people should look into if they're interested in working or extensively traveling abroad?
Well, I would absolutely encourage if people have the 2 years to give and do not have children, say, under 18 that they're taking care of, Peace Corps is a wonderful way to go. I would recommend that to anybody who would really be interested, you know, on a volunteer basis. A lot of churches have programs where they send people abroad. And you would also be surprised how many service groups or trade groups, like librarians, hotel people. So they have international listings and international opportunities, especially if you are interested in volunteering. And I will tell you truly again, if you learn the language, you will be a commodity. I mean, people were paying me incredible money when I lived in Novosibirsk because there were almost no native speakers. Maybe there were 10 of us in the city, let alone someone who knew journalism and knew, you know, the ins and outs of writing.
So in general, you would encourage people with disabilities to travel and or live abroad, right?
Absolutely. What I found was when I was abroad, you know, you're right. People weren't looking at me as blind. They were looking, wow, she's bilingual. She's here. She's excited about this. She can do stuff. And most places outside the USA have far superior public transportation to what we have. And so getting around is much less of a hassle and a challenge than it is in many places in the United States.
Well, you know, that's a consideration that probably never crossed the minds of most of our American listeners.
And I would say, you know, some people have asked me, well, you know, weren't you afraid or were you ever cheated or what have you? I mean, one time I had a wallet stolen and I was stupid. That would have happened if I were blind or sighted. I was with a sighted friend for that matter. I was never shortchanged that I know of. In fact, people were wonderful to me, even people who didn't know me. And it wasn't out of pity. I felt like it was out of respect. And I would not say, I mean, I hear stories of people, you know, Americans walking out of a bar at 2 a.m. and flashing their dollars for a taxi, and then they wonder why they get mugged. Well, that's just being stupid. It doesn't matter if you're disabled or not. I mean, be smart, but don't be afraid. And make friends. Make the good contacts that you're able to make.
Okay, so you've lived in a lot of different countries and you've traveled in others. You must speak a lot of different languages.
Well, I studied French in high school. And of course, I lived a year in Switzerland and studied at a French school. So I'm fully fluent in French. While I was there, my host father was a German teacher and knew I was interested, and I studied German hard, and I would say, I'm conversational in German. Russian I learned very fluently through both studying it and then, of course, living in Russia and Russian-speaking countries for about 10 years. And I say I know just enough Italian to get myself in trouble, and I still remember enough Hungarian to think that I'm not completely senile. So the Russian and French I can interpret professionally. The others, you know, I can get along.
Now for this week's final item, how to contact Elizabeth Schuster Sammons and how to read some of her writings about her experiences.
You put some of your experiences into blogs on the net. Where can people go to find these blogs to learn of some more of your experiences and read more in detail?
Sure. Okay. My blog, which really is a literary blog covering all kinds of things, but I write very much from the heart about my travel experiences. It's all one word, windowsofthought.wordpress.com. So windowsofthought.wordpress.com. There's a search field in there. So if you write Russian or French or, you know, other things, you'll find different experiences. But I welcome anybody to kind of just go through. I've been keeping the blog for about 3 years now, fairly regularly. It's certainly something that I enjoy writing about, you know, some of the adventures I've had, some of the people I've met.
And if people wanted to contact you directly, would they be able to do that?
Absolutely. My email is antigone@columbus.rr.com, and I will answer people's inquiries if they have inquiries or concerns. I can certainly refer them to different places as well, so I would be very happy to do that.
Great. And as usual, all of the contact information and resources that Elizabeth listed will be in our show notes, along with other shows about travel. If you just go to www.eyesonsuccess.net and look for the show notes for this episode.
That's it for show number 1541. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about making data visualizations accessible. SAS develops tools for analyzing and visualizing big data. We will speak with Ed Summers, head of the accessibility team at SAS, about how these tools are made accessible. Ed, who is blind himself, will also describe methods the visually impaired can use to interact with various types of analytical data, as well as some of SAS's educational initiatives. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-258-0333.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman Torpy and Peter Torpy and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. Browse the full archive of programs, find instructions for subscribing to the podcasts, and much more at www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also find us on iTunes, follow us on Facebook and on audioboom.com, at Eyes on Success, or Twitter @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success and have a nice day.